Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go. It is Cody and Gold on a Red Friday in Kansas City. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Busy show today, not only because we're getting set for Chiefs-Giants Sunday Night Football, but we got some fun stuff planned. We've got Jake Eisenberg coming up in a half hour. We will talk a little Royals baseball. Then at 11, Josh Briscoe going to join us, of course, pre- and post-game host on the Chiefs Radio Network. We are still searching for Briscoe's first win as a pre- and post-game host. I'm going to keep saying that until it happens. We got to get it done on Sunday for him. Also for the
if
Chiefs.
Not now,
you know,
it's about to get real bleak.
Then a little bit later on today, Paul Charchian, usually on a Thursday, but we had a short show yesterday, so we'll get you set for fantasy football, for your guillotine leagues, for all your fantasy, daily fantasy stuff. We are not doing What's Your Fantasy this year, but as I was saying that out loud, I thought about it. I said, oh, all your fantasies. So maybe What's Your Fantasy at some
maybe
point.
It comes back, maybe just like once, like a mid-year
randomly.
Edition
mm-hmm.
or around playoff time for the fantasy playoffs.
And then it's a Fan Club Friday brought to you by Jay Rieger & Co. We're going to have some of their new canned cocktails, plus some special guests joining us. I'm excited about this. So one of our sister stations, 106.5 The Wolf, has a brand new morning show, Jenny and Jagger in the morning. And so Matt Gaspy, Jenny Matthews, and Jagger all going to be in studio. We'll get to know them a little bit. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that. And
I don't really know them all that well.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to the 1 o'clock hour, man.
Can I say so? Like when we have them in, I do think I need to broach one thing with Jenny specifically.
Okay.
So she was in the hallway. She was being shown around the building a little before her show had started, and I had met Jenny on multiple occasions at a family member's house. So, like, we had engaged in conversation multiple times and about the fact that we both work in radio.
Okay.
I had mentioned this. I said, hey, we've actually met. And she did the, like, of course, she definitely
oh,
did not
hey
remember.
You.
Oh, I got hey you'd bad. No
I mean,
chance.
In fairness, how long ago was this?
I don't know. I mean, it's been several times over multiple years. Mm. So I will say that I definitely got hey you'd. There's just no way she remembered that interaction.
Are you going to bring this up?
Yeah. Okay. I am. You know what? Honestly, I appreciate the courtesy, hey you, versus embarrassing him and be like, I don't think we've met, you know?
So it'll be fun to have the folks over from 106.5 The Wolf join us in studio for a Fan Club Friday. You guys always can be part of the show on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Let's start with what has to happen for the Chiefs to get out of this 0-2 hole and get a win against the Giants. And then also, frankly, what do you have to see to make you feel better even about the next two big-time opponents that are on the schedule? Ravens, Lions down the road. I'll be honest, though, I'm not even worrying about that yet. At this point, they just need to stack a win and get a W and everybody take a deep breath more than it is for me. Hey, they got to do this to show me that they can beat the Ravens in a week. They're not in the, they don't have that luxury. I don't even think as Chiefs fans, we have that luxury here in Kansas City yet.
I know the look ahead stuff isn't as important as it usually is because they just need to get a win. But in a lot of ways, this win doesn't do them what it needs to do, unless it also shows signs that they're able to beat some of the big boys on the street. And two of those are coming up in the next few weeks. And look, I don't think the Jags are a total pushover, although I think Trevor Lawrence continues to point out the issues that he has as a starting quarterback, kind of like the way, you know, Tua does in the game last night. But I just think that if you're going to count on them beating some of the good teams and being a Super Bowl contender, not just scraping by the Giants, then there are a couple of things. And by the way, in a weird way, I'll also just take a scrape by the Giants. Like, I will take just a win this weekend in a lot of different ways, but there are a couple of things I think they need to show. One is any kind of ability to have a running game that exists at all, like even just some semblance of a running game. I would like to see improvement from the passing game based on the idea that Xavier Worthy is most likely to be available there on Sunday night. So, like, incremental improvement out of the passing game, some sign that you have a running game, and some sign that you have a pass rush. Somebody yesterday, and it is only a two-game sample size, so admittedly a little bit different, they put out the success rate of edge rushers. So this does not include Chris Jones. The success rate of edge rushers and NFL teams. And just think about like that normal box where the top right is you are elite. The top left is you're elite at one thing. The bottom right is you are elite at the other thing. And the bottom left is you stink at everything you do.
Yeah.
George Karloftis and Charles Omenihu were in the bottom left quadrant. As in, you stink at it. You're not getting pressure under any circumstance at all. And I know that's not true because George Karloftis technically is like 19th, I think, in the NFL in total pressures. But the consistency in which he's able to do it and those things, like those are really the three things I want to see the most so that I feel like they got a chance against the Ravens the following week.
Right. I think it's to the point now, maybe this will be the case until Rice and Worthy are on the field together. But honestly, I want to see a game where Patrick Mahomes is not the leading rusher for this football team. And I understand if that's what it takes to win the football game, then he'll make the play, right, to try to do that. I'm not thinking that necessarily, but you get my point. I don't want Patrick Mahomes as the leading rusher for this football team for a third straight week. That's still not part of the proper formula for this team to win. Doesn't mean he can't make a great play with his legs in the game that helps him win a game, sure. But it means the running game is somewhat effective. It means that whether it's Pacheco or they give the ball to Rashard Smith more, or maybe Hunt gets more carries than even Pacheco, whatever that combination is at this point in time, I don't want him being the leading rusher. To me, that's a sign of good things. It means that likely the passing game is also working a little bit better. It means the rushing game is working better. I'm with you defensively. You know, the Spags have to dial up blitz 64% of the time again.
Ideally, no.
You know, and so it's things like that. I actually think Russell Wilson, of course, is going to take some shots down the field, and they're going to get the Chiefs a time or two. I mean, it's going to happen. Like, you hope that it happens when the game is in hand, but they're going to take deep shots down the field, and eventually they will connect on one with Malik Nabers. He's too talented. They'll jump ball, underthrown ball, whatever
he'll
it may
get,
be.
He's going to look. He's going to be a very, very, very successful wide receiver. I expect him to get some numbers. I'm not going to beat myself up if he gets one down the field on them.
Yeah.
That's to be expected based on, I don't know, the one skill set that Russell Wilson seems to maintain, which is throwing a deep ball that a wide receiver can just jump up and get, and their ability to, like, have one of the better wide receivers in the NFL. But, like, they have to have a running game. You're right. I don't want to come out of week three where Patrick Mahomes is once again the leading rusher.
It's not a good sign.
He's only 25 yards behind Saquon Barkley, a yard behind Christian McCaffrey. He's 15 yards behind he's ahead of Jahmyr Gibbs. All the backs who have had good starts to the season, other than two or three, are essentially the same rushing total as the starting quarterback for this team. The pass rush is one that we have been, because of the offensive issues, ignoring a little bit. Because the defense played so much better last week as a unit, they have, once again, no pass rush. What happened to Charles Omenihu? He's awful through two games. And it is two games. So I'm not saying he can't get better. The team can't improve in that area. Generally speaking, George Karloftis has been an effect. George Karloftis has never been Myles Garrett. He's always been an effective pass rusher who is a good one, right? He's not Max Crosby, Myles Garrett. He's never been those guys, but he's been good his entire NFL career. So, like, can you just be that most of the time? And can Chris Jones, good enough so that Chris Jones can stop getting triple teamed, is what I'm asking out of Charles Omenihu. Those guys aren't beating guys one-on-one, is a real concern for me still. But I kind of want them to not just win. Like, I'll take a win because they need a win. I do want them to kind of make me believe that the Ravens game is
well, ideally, yeah. I mean, ideally, I think we all would like to see that. But they're at the point where it is truly just find a way to win the football game. There's definitely some elements that could make you feel better going into a showdown against the Ravens in week four, but they just don't have that luxury because they're sitting at 0-2. If they were 1-1 or 2-0, we'd be saying, hey, I need them to win in this exact way in order for me to feel good enough going into the Ravens game. There's certain things you and I would like to see. It's not just that I would like to see for the long term. Yeah. It's like, I truly think Mahomes being the leading rusher on Sunday does not bode well for their chances to even win this game on Sunday.
Sure.
You know, it's not just a long-term season thing that can't be.
You're
that
saying
way.
If they can't run the ball, then they're not winning this game, let alone the
right.
Ravens game, like, or the Lions won a couple weeks
when
after
this season started. We all thought this was going to be just an easy win and all that. Like, I'm not saying it's a 50-50 coin flip game. I still give the Chiefs the edge. They're 6-point, 5.5-point favorites for a reason. In this spot, like, that's not a small spread. And favorites so far this year, by the way, are hitting at a crazy rate. Favorites of over 4.5 are at a ridiculous clip right now, two weeks plus a game last night into the season, as far as winning outright, not always covering, but winning outright. The Bills, of course, did not cover yesterday, but they won outright. So, you know, someone says the Chiefs aren't blowing any team out. Yeah, I tend to agree. We'll give our score predictions later. I think they cover, though. I'll tell you that. I agree with Dusty. Him and I were talking before the show, and I think he said it on his show, too. I do think the Chiefs can cover the 5.5 in this game on Sunday. I know that sounds crazy because they're 0-2, but I do think the Giants have shown that they're also capable of giving up some points. There's no doubt, while the front of that defensive line, the front seven, is really impressive for the Giants, this is still, of the three, secondary-wise, by far the worst secondary they're facing. And I know that we talked about Adoree Mitchell, I think it was. Mitchell?
Jackson.
Yeah, I knew that wasn't right. Yeah, Jackson for the Eagles.
You're thinking of Adonai Mitchell A.D. Mitchell, whatever.
And so we said, hey, that's a weakness for the Eagles. But in general, the Eagles are a better defense than the Giants still overall. And the Chargers, I think, overall are a better defense.
I agree.
Than the Giants are. So this should be an opportunity, hopefully. While it's a good front, I do think there's opportunities in the secondary.
The problem is there is no, up until you get to like the dead end of the season, and even then I would say not that easy, the Chiefs do not have any respite. There is no easy stretch, okay? Like, that doesn't exist. Giants is an easy game, which is why they, as you know, relative to NFL standards and their schedule standards, but, like, they're not going to get some big break. The Giants in Jacksonville, this is probably, genuinely, their easiest stretch, and it includes a game of Baltimore and Detroit, because in a five-game stretch, at least they get Vegas at home, Jacksonville in New York. Because then it's Commanders in Buffalo, at Denver. The Colts doesn't look as easy as it once was. They've got Houston and the Chargers again. Denver and the Raiders again towards the end. Maybe the only other easy stretch is easy being, like, as far as their schedule goes, is at home versus the Chargers, at Tennessee, at home versus Denver, and at the Raiders to end the season for the final four games. That's probably their second easiest run of games. It's been such a weird watch for the Chiefs this year, because I think we came out of that game feeling very similarly, which is they still lost, but they played better. Like, they played better than they did in the first game.
Yep.
It wasn't good enough, and there were still a whole bunch of problems, but they definitely played better in game two than they did game one.
Yeah, the defense was the difference for me in particular.
So I don't want to backslide. I don't want to backslide into, like, they fall into bad play again this following week, and they have to, like, win some 19-17 game against the Giants, and then it's like, well, I mean, do they have any chance of beating Baltimore? Ugh.
Coming up in 20 minutes, Jake Eisenberg is going to join us. We'll talk some Royals baseball. Do you think what happened with the drop pass that led to a pick with Travis, does that mean you think there's going to be a bigger performance on Sunday, or do you just think it is what it is?
Oh, from Travis? You know, so here's the thing. It's really interesting. On his podcast, he seemed to suggest that he had a lot on his plate. As in, like, they use him a lot, he's being used a lot, and he's, I don't know, he wasn't making any excuse for his play, to this point, he's played pretty well.
This was Mahomes' ask about Travis Kelce's usage, and if they're asking too much of him.
I honestly don't know. I mean, I know he wants to be out there at the end of the day. I mean, he wants to have the chance to make the plays happen, and he's made the plays happen for years, and so, I don't feel like we asked for too much from him, but I mean, we asked for him to be out there and be himself and just be who he is, and I think that in itself is enough for us. And so I wouldn't. That's probably a question you can ask Trav, but I feel like he's in a good spot, and it's hard to get him off the field. I know that.
I could be wrong. I thought one of the blowups on the sideline, if you want to call it that,
was
because he was mad that they weren't putting him in the game. Maybe I misread it. That's how I took it as well. Are they asking too much of him? I mean, I think
it's like the Salvador Perez problem.
Well, to me, it is just, I want him on the field plenty. I think, though, I would like to see, now maybe this doesn't involve not using him as much. I would like to see Noah Gray more involved in the offense. I don't know if that necessarily means that it has to be taking Kelce off the field. I just think they could use Noah Gray when they're down on the wide receivers right now, have Noah Gray in the slot a little bit. I think we saw that actually at one point or twice in the game on Sunday against the Eagles. And then the pass was batted down. They actually had Noah Gray wide open, but unfortunately that was one of the batted passes from the Eagles front.
I look, because of the early part of the season and because of the lack of wide receivers, they might not have a choice. I would like them to treat it the way we talk about Salvador Perez. For a huge chunk of the regular season, when Rashee Rice is back and Xavier Worthy is healthy, I would like them to pitch count Travis Kelce. And he's never done that at any point in any stage of his career. And I do think, Gold, to your point, it maybe does kind of piss him off a little when he is off the field in what he deems to be an important moment. And look, if it's third down, if it's third and goal, I don't want him off the field. But if it's first and 10 from the 35 and they want to run a couple snaps where Travis Kelce's not there, I'm okay with it. Not because I think he's downslid in his level of play, but because in the end, I still don't care about, I care about this game on Sunday because they forced me to, right? Because they made you care about a game because they've started 0-2. But meaningful football does not start for the Chiefs until December or January. And so if I think I can get the better version, I think, and I know that like everybody doesn't agree with me, and that's fine because he made a huge mistake on Sunday and he made a huge mistake in the game running into Worthy in the first game.
Two or three big ones, yep.
I think it's pretty, I think Travis Kelce looks like he's going to be a better football player this year than he was last year. I think that already, like, that's already showing up.
Yeah, as long as the mistakes don't continue, then I'm 100% with you. It's the mistakes can't happen, but if you're just saying the way he's moving when he's running his routes, I'll agree with you there. When he's moving and running the routes, it seems like he's a little bit more effective. But if mistakes are going to happen, then obviously it wipes that out. So hopefully that's just fluky stuff that we've seen 2 weeks in. The snap count thing is interesting, though, Cody, because last year going into the season, before the Rice injury, the thought was that, hey, this is Rice's show now. The offense runs through him.
Yeah.
They're going to try to save Kelce for the playoffs. Well, Rice goes down. Then they were forced to overwork Kelce. His yards per catch were down, a career low, or at least low compared to, I don't know if it was a career low other than in full season. Yes, his rookie year might have been lower, but you get my point.
His rookie year was slightly lower.
Yeah. And this year, once again, they're without Rice. They were out Worthy for, you know, basically two games because Worthy was done three plays in of the week one game. And so have they been forced to do that more than they wanting to as well? I don't know if we'll ever get the real answer to that until hopefully Brown, Worthy, and Rice are all in the field together here in three or four, or I guess 4 or 5 weeks.
But doesn't it feel like the comp to the Salvador Perez stuff, like where you and I both know, Gold, and the numbers bear it. Salvador Perez plays better when he catches a little bit less. And at some point this year, the Royals didn't have that luxury because they didn't have enough offense. And Salvador Perez, much like Travis Kelce, doesn't like to play baseball when he's not catching. Not saying he hates DHing or whatever. He likes being behind the dish. He likes to catch. Travis Kelce likes being out there for every snap. But as a coach, there's got to be a balance between you tell the guy, hey, we're going to, instead of 100% of the snaps, which you've pretty much been your entire NFL career, we'd like you for like 80, 75, whatever the number is, right? I don't think he's ever put.
But you would have to agree, though, if you're telling me, and I agree with you, that he looks better, then right now while they're down multiple weapons, then he does need to be playing.
They might not have a choice right now, admittedly. I totally get that. But when they start getting everyone back, if we do get the thing that we said was a 20% chance at one point, the Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice, and Xavier Worthy are on a football field together at the same time with Travis Kelce, well, then you can't, especially because Jalen Royals is practicing. Maybe he's ready in a week.
Yeah, it looks like Jalen Royals was a full participant. I mean, we'll hear from Andy in 1 o'clock. Is there a chance he's active?
Maybe. I think that there's still a chance they might slow walk it.
He
and
was
just
a full participant.
We'll get you back in Baltimore.
Worthy wasn't.
Yeah. They might just go with the vet in. That's tough to say.
What exactly did Travis say, Cody?
It's weird because, like, if you listen to the podcast, I think people took it as like he was complaining that he's got a lot on his plate and so, like, maybe too much on his plate. I didn't necessarily read it that way. The word for word on it's tough because he's reading it. Essentially, he's talking about his role on the team as it sits. That's why he was asked that question at the press conference.
Yeah.
Some people took it as Travis Kelce was being like, I got a lot going on. I think it's just like the whole offense for 2 years. I think some of this is going to this, where there was a long time in their careers where they read each other's mind. And there's been multiple moments of the last two seasons where it's been the opposite of that. And he says he's trying to think of multiple things. How do I say? How do I keep the depth? How do I read Patrick's mind so I can be open? I think he was making more of that point, Drew. Not, I've got too much going on. I need to play less. I think he's just saying there's a lot of moving parts in this offense, and I'm a huge part of all of those moving parts, and that makes it hard to be perfect sometimes as an offense. Mm-hmm. And I took it more kind of in that way, I guess. It's tough. I just think like pitch counting him once Rashee's back is
so I looked as he played 77% of the snaps against the Eagles. He was higher than any wide receiver or tight end or other than offensive lineman in Mahomes.
I think he has to be right now, guys, while they're trying to get everybody that they thought was part of the plan available. And that maybe gets better this week if Worthy plays. We think he's going to, barring a surprise later from Andy at 1 o'clock. And then, of course, we're still 4 weeks away or so. 5 weeks, I guess, from Rice being available for this team.
I wonder if this has to go into the last conversation that we just had to start the show, but someone on the text line saying, I'm tired of him saying I need to be better on his podcast. I think one of the things that maybe makes it seem like they're ready to play against Baltimore or Detroit is a game with no blowups on the sideline. You're locked in the whole time.
And that
you're
usually not comes with mistakes. Playing a good football game.
You know, you're locked in. You're not making mistakes because it feels like in both games, something has happened, and it with previous years, I don't know if it's more patience or just the fact that they've been losing these close games, there's a sense of urgency that's there, and it, or like a panic almost that's happening, it feels like, in watching these two games where they're not melting down necessarily, but there's a lot of panic going on, and it's not like the cool, calm collectiveness that we see that we have seen from this team over the last number of years.
Yeah, like, and I don't know that, I don't think any of us other than know the exact answer. I don't know if it, I don't think they're panicking. I think no. There's clearly visible frustration, like, that's happening.
Yeah,
I don't
it's
know
more
if
obvious.
I don't know if they're panicking, but yeah, there's frustration. Look, I mean, it sounds crazy, but they haven't won a football game since, like, mid-January. Now, I understand the long offseason, but my point is, like, for them, right, it's been a while since they won
that's
a football game.
That's a lot
game.
Longer than they yeah, are accustomed to.
I mean, if you're Travis Kelce, you haven't gone through, like, you haven't waited this many months to win a football game ever?
I mean, certainly during, they started 1-5.
Okay, so 2014 or whatever it was, yeah. Whatever year that was,
that
right?
That might be the
okay,
answer.
So that's that over 10 years? Yeah. I mean, that's why I think it's not something they've experienced very often.
I also think sometimes we're just like delusional in the sense that Travis Kelce didn't always play with emotion. We just didn't care when they were winning. This is generally speaking who he has been as a player. My thing is that it seemed like the whole team was frustrated in the last game, and they were all collectively showing frustration, which is not something I'm used to. The players who typically play with emotion, Chris Jones and Travis Kelce, the Jones one, the only one that bothered me was the end of the game, where I don't think you should talk trash against someone you're losing, actively yeah. getting
he
ready
was
to
still
lose
talking
against.
On the sidelines. There was another video mm-hmm. that came out. I don't know if you saw that one. Yeah, it seems like he's been more vocal.
He said they ran the same play seven
effing times.
Effing mm-hmm. times or whatever. Yeah. Is that what it was?
Yes. Yeah.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll talk some Royals baseball with Jake Eisenberg. Last night, Thursday night football, ended up being a lot closer than people thought. The Miami Dolphins, I thought, had a very impressive game plan, and especially in the first half. They kept the ball away from Josh Allen. They didn't make any mistakes. In the second half, of course, two massive mistakes, roughing the punter and then just a pitiful throw and interception from Tua late in that game. The Bills end up winning comfortably score-wise. It was closer than that if you watch the game, obviously. I'll tell you this, Mike McDaniel's team did not look like a team that was quitting on him.
No.
I actually thought his game plan was pretty damn good. To me, he saved his job for a week or two.
I think, and look, the report before the game is they're going to take their time with him. Teams have said that and then immediately fired someone. They fought hard enough against the Bills. In Buffalo, you can't fire him yet. Not yet. Honestly, this is the thing with Mike McDaniel. I still think there's a chance he might be successful somewhere else because I think his single biggest problem as a coach is that his quarterback is Tua. I think his biggest problem, yeah. I actually don't think his offensive scheme is all that bad. I think his problem is that his quarterback is Tua, and Tua is now very expensive in addition to just being a problematic quarterback, and he can't run their system the way, because like the game plan last night was awesome. The way the running game was working, the passing game was working, the way they were scheming guys open was working. And then eventually Tua just made a horrid, horrid mistake like he makes in a lot of NFL football games. And so, like, I actually think, and that doesn't mean he's not going to get fired. Mike McDaniel is not going to be the Dolphins head coach in 2026.
The only problem with you saying the quarterback
the entire 2025.
I agree with the quarterback point. The only problem is like how many coaches in the league would we say that about? Like, oh, they'd be way better if they had a top tier quarterback.
Sure, but I'm not saying like I would just say it's like case by case for me. I don't think every bad coach is just a quarterback away from being good. I just happen to think Mike McDaniel would look a lot different with a quarterback that was decent.
I think we
it's
all
not like guys aren't getting open either. Like, no, I think the quarterback's not making the throws. Like his design stuff is, it seems like it works.
I thought last night was impressive from their coaching staff. I just think though, we knew this years, like 2 years ago, we always said like, hey, his style, when they're winning, it's going to be great. When they're losing, it's going to make him look like an idiot.
Yeah.
He's obviously not one, but when you hear his press conferences and stuff, when they're winning, like, oh, wow, he's just different. When you're losing and you hear some
Deep
of the
thinker.
Stuff he says, yeah. you're like, oh, gosh, is this like this guy's the head coach? Like, there's just a difference when things are going well. We just got done talking about it. This was Mike McDaniel, I think, 3 days ago.
To win games, you have to win the game, not lose the game, honestly. And that is how you lose the game. You're moving the ball down the field. You're first and 10, and then you find yourself at second and 20. That was critical.
When you're 5-0, you're like, oh, okay. When you're 0-2, you know, 0-3, you're like, oh, that guy's the head coach. You know, it's just the way we approach things. Man.
I know we got to take a break and get to Jake Eisenberg. I will say there is still about, and the text line sent it in too, but I had said this at the.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The end of last week, there is still like a 30% chance, 40% chance that maybe the Bills defense just stinks.
I think there's some problems. So they were without,
I think we gotta talk about
they're not good.
We can get into that more in a little bit if you guys want. Yeah, Matt Milano and Ed Oliver obviously weren't playing, but still, that defense hasn't looked all that impressive. All right, up next, we'll briefly talk some Royals baseball with Jake Eisenberg, and then we'll get back into the reality and what the numbers say about an 0-2 team, an 0-3 team. Versus 1-2 team. That's next. Back here on Cody and Gold, we will get into some of the numbers behind a 0-3 start versus a 1-2 start and the reality of what that means heading into Sunday's game for the Chiefs. We'll do that in just a bit. Of course, you guys can watch the show on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, X. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Let's talk a little Royals baseball, though. They wrap up their homestand and wrap up the home slate at Kauffman Stadium this weekend as the Toronto Blue Jays are in town. To talk about the future a little bit, let's welcome in Jake Eisenberg, who joins us. Hopefully we don't have any connection issues today.
Like that was on us
that
anyway.
That was definitely us. That was definitely us. Eisenberg, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Yeah, obviously, you know, the last time that we were able to have, like, a full-on conversation, things were a little different. And, you know, last week we got interrupted a little bit, and it was sort of looking grim but still possible. And now the conversation certainly has changed a little bit, which is unfortunate. But, yeah, great to be with you guys as always.
I guess the way I kind of view it is very similar. Like, I'm annoyed in the sense that they did not live up to the expectations the team had and should have realistically had. But I also know between the injuries and all the other stuff, Jake, I don't know. I don't know that I expected way more than around a 500 season based on the number of injuries they have. And I'm trying to take the positives going into next year at this point. And it probably starts with guys like Steven Kolek, where at this point between Burgert and Kolek and Cole Reagans or whoever, they seemingly have 7 to 9 options in the starting rotation, which means they also have pitching options that could end up helping them get the bat I think they'll need for next year.
Yeah, I mean, let's start here. This is a team that should have pretty high expectations for itself come 2026. The expectations that they had for 2025, which was winning the division and at least making the playoffs, those should still be the expectations for 2026 because it's largely not just the same cast of characters, but also an even deeper pitching staff, like you mentioned. I mean, just off the top, we're assuming everybody's healthy. We're talking about Cole Reagan, Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, Chris Bubich, Noah Cameron, Steven Kolek, Ryan Burgert, you know, hopefully Alec Marsh is healthy, and then so on and so forth. We'll see what kind of other depth exists down the stretch. That's just the pitchers that are under contract for next year. So that's a great starting point when it comes to starting pitcher health. And then on the offensive side, and this is where this season becomes a little bit perplexing at times because, look, I think it's pretty easy to point to one of the more consistent weak spots of the team this year was the offense as a collective. But from an individual perspective, well, you still got an all-star level season from Bobby Witt Jr. Was it generational like last year? No, but still one of the best offensive performers in all of baseball. Then you have Michael Garcia breaking out in an all-star capacity. Vinny Pasquantino goes 30-100 for the first time in his career. Salvador Perez has a career high in home runs outside of his 48 home run season. He's never had another 30 home run season. He's one shy of doing that. He could get to 100 RBIs for his second consecutive year. So from an individual perspective, those four guys have had some really robust offensive seasons, and that's why the question mark is, okay, so where's the disconnect? And I think one of the frustrating parts about this year is that you've seen really good starting pitching. You've seen spurts where the offense has been really good. It just doesn't seem like those two things have happened consistently at the same time, right?
Yeah, when you look at like some of the individual players, that'll be where we get into 2026. Like, can Michael Garcia repeat it, right? Can Salvi stay that way? And I guess to Salvi's point, do we all just assume that picking up his option's a guarantee? I mean, I would like them to. So I'm from your perspective.
Stop you right there. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure. Perez will be a Royal in 2026.
Okay, good. Look, I wanted to ask just to be sure, you know, because Carter Jensen's actually been pretty good to start his major league career.
It's not. Let me be clear. It's not like I have like specific inside information there, but I mean, like I'll eat the shoelace on my left foot if he's not a Royal. Like,
all right, we'll mark the tape. We'll mark the tape.
Be careful with that. I once said that, and then I had to eat part of a hat. Now, that was in fairness. That was when I thought Alcides Escobar wouldn't be a Royal anymore, and that was a mistake. I should have known that they loved him in this organization and that he would be a lifetime Royal. What do you make of Carter Jensen's start, Jake?
What I'm saying here is that, like, the sky is blue and Salvador Perez will be wearing blue. Like, these are two, you know, things. As far as Carter Jensen, to get your question, I've been really, really impressed, especially with the approach to the plate. I think he has one more strikeout than he does walk, and the walks that he's drawn have been, like, six or seven or eight pitch walks. I think it was a couple of nights ago. He had back-to-back eight pitch walks. Obviously, he showed off the power to foul pole to foul pole. I mean, he's got the chance to be an impact bat, as we've already seen. And the fact that he's getting his feet wet now in games that are meaningful, I mean, this counts for something. This counts for experience. And that is a huge step forward, I think, for Carter Jensen, who I think we should remember is still 22 years old, same as Jack Caglione. And so when it comes to Carter Jensen, and you know, we've only seen a little bit from him behind the plate, but Matt Quatrero said the other day that he was impressed with how he's handled himself behind the plate and certainly gaining experience talking to Salvador Perez and Luke Maley, who have both been there and done that at a really high level defensively for a long time. That only helps. I think that it's important to level set here that, you know, these are two 22-year-olds, one of whom, you know, was drafted literally last year, and one of whom is a 22-year-old catcher that was drafted out of high school. Like, the fact that they're getting meaningful at-bats and producing the way that they are since they both came up in September, I think that's an important junction to look at specifically for Jack Caglione. I think that's really impressive, and I think that's a really good sign for next year.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. You mentioned Jensen there and Cags. Looking ahead to next season, though, if this offense is to get going and bounce back, are those two players that just have to be a huge part of it?
I don't know if they have to be a huge part of it, but I do think they have to be a part of it. You know, I think that the huge part is going to come from the guys we've already talked about. It's Bobby, Vinny, Salvi, and Michael. I mean, that is the core of your offense, and that is, I think, what the expectation of the core of your offense should be. But if Jack Caglione and Carter Jensen can be complementary pieces that can give you some pop and drive in some runs and lengthen that lineup, I think that's a big deal. I think one of the things that's been interesting about this year, you know, I was looking at this yesterday because until yesterday, which obviously the Royals got shut out, you know, the Royals had scored five or more runs in four consecutive games. That was the first time that it happened all season. The Royals have actually scored at least five runs in a game, the third fewest times in baseball. And the Royals have done really, really well in those games, which is to be expected because the pitching's been good. But the Royals have also played the second most games decided by three runs or fewer this year. And they've been really, really good in those close games. But when you have those close games, your margin for error is so much thinner. You know, there are two numbers that I think you can point to that tell you, you know, how tenuous, you know, a season can be and how one batted ball this way or one bounce that way can really make a difference. It's the fact that the Royals have 76 wins and Carlos Estevez has 40 saves. That's more than 50% of the team's wins. That's really impressive for Carlos Estevez, but it also tells you how many close games the Royals have been in. And then just the other day, Lucas Erceg got the win, and reliever wins and losses are not something that I think are all that important. But when you see a pitcher like Lucas Erceg have 8 wins on a season, that tells you that he's been in a lot of really close games where the Royals have been within a run in one direction or another when he's entered a game and have found a way to come back and win 8 times. You know, I think that says a lot about, A, how good the back end of the bullpen has been. The bullpen's been great, but also how many close games there have been. And when there are that many close games, your margin for error is that much thinner.
Knowing that some of the teams that we have hoped the Royals would model their success after have been willing to let go of pitchers in an effort in like a constant rotation, right? We always kind of point to the Rays and the way they like might trade away Chris Archer. Do you anticipate maybe a busy offseason for the Royals, at least in the conversation sector, knowing that they're going to try to add maybe another outfielder or that the bullpen is also deep? Because you mentioned Estevez and Erceg, like they're deep in multiple areas. Do you expect them to be willing to like shuffle things around?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd absolutely be willing. I think what J.J. Piccolo and his front office have shown is that they're always willing to have conversations that are going to help the team get better. We certainly saw that at the trade deadline. It was not easy trading away Freddie Fermin, but getting back Ryan Burger and Steven Kolek, those are two great controllable starting pitchers who have both gotten off to fantastic starts with the Royals. And like we were talking about when we got started, the amount of starting pitching depth that the Royals have, obviously they needed every single one of those arms and then some this year. That was certainly something that was not predicted, especially after all the help the Royals had in the rotation last year. But when you do have that kind of starting pitching depth, and that is an area of weakness for a lot of other teams, and you're trying to supplement your offense in some ways, yeah, if you look at the most obvious quote-unquote trade chips that the Royals have outside of, you know, maybe minor league prospects here or there, yeah, you'd figure that starting pitchers might come up in that conversation more than other players.
Jake Eisenberg, of course, you'll hear him this weekend on 96.5 The Fan, the final week or so of the baseball season. We appreciate you coming on throughout the year, man.
Yeah, it's been great. I think we got one more shot with you guys. So you're not done with me quite yet.
We'll stick in one more week with you. You know what? Talk some, hopefully, road trip baseball and a nice finish to the season.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, walking around Sacramento, you know, chopping it up with you guys.
Sacramento. I'm sorry you have to go there.
We'll do some searching for Sacramento coffee shops for you ahead of time. Thank you.
Oh, please. Yeah, send Rex my way.
There you go. That's Jake Eisenberg. Forgot that they got to still go out to the minor league ballpark in Sacramento.
What a joke of a franchise the A's are.
You know what's weird? The A's are actually playing pretty good down the stretch.
I know.
Their offense is good. Their pitching is atrocious, but their offense has been decent. I mean,
Billy Beane's constantly just like, he's like the person who tried to trade a paperclip up for a house. Is his entire job as a GM. It must be an awful existence.
The only thing, you know, we were talking to Eisenberg there, and we'll have plenty of time this offseason to think about it too. You know, I was asking, like, how big of an impact do Jensen and Cags have to have next year for this offense and team to be where they should be or hope to be? And he's like, it's still going to be Vinny and Bobby and Salvi and Mikel. I agree. Two of those names there, I still have somewhat question marks heading in the next season. Salvi will be a year older. I'm fine with picking up the option, by the way. That's not what I'm saying.
It's $13 million, sure.
I'm fine with the option, but there's still always going to be the question, father time, anytime. I mean, every year now for Salvi. That's just the reality.
We question for the first 2 months of this year.
Yeah, so that will still be a question heading into next year. Mikel was awesome this year. Is there regression? Okay, if there is, but to what extent? Is it, you know, 20% regression or 5%, 10%? So those would be, like, I think we know what we're getting from Vinny now. I think we know what you're getting from Bobby. Everybody act like he had a bad year. He did not. He just did not have an all-time season like he had last year, okay? So I know what I'm getting from Bobby and Vinny next year. Mikel, I just worry, is there regression? And Salvi, it's father time. Okay, and so if one of those or both of those things happen, how do you make up for that? Well, it means Carter Jensen or Cags have to step up in a big way, unless you tell me they're trading a pitcher or two to go get a legitimate outfielder.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, I don't think they're going to go in with no questions, but I'm going to go into this season with the exact same expectations. Win the division, go to the playoffs.
Yes.
Those are reasonable based on Bobby Wood Jr., Vinny, the starting pitching staff, because I'm going to assume you're going to have more help. The bullpen has been completely underrated this year, not just the Carlos Estevez part.
Career year for him, 40.
They are one of the better bullpens in baseball.
40 saves for Carlos.
I know. Hell of a year. They still
had a great year.
I think part of it has been mired in the idea of, like, you just remember the time Zerpa or Schreiber blew it. And in your head, you're like, this bullpen's no good. You're like, that's just not accurate.
People were questioning Carlos too, you know, early in the season. Yeah, he's not a guy that's going to strike out the side consistently or anything crazy like that. He's not Mariano Rivera, okay? But He had an unbelievable year. He'd be another name where I would be heading into next year as great as he was. Like, he'll be a year older as well. He's not a young pitcher. Yeah. So there's some guys that you wonder, would they regress? Well, how do you balance that out? And that's going to be, I think, some of the questions all offseason.
Now, in fairness, I feel like this is pretty much Bobby Wood Jr.'s floor. And top five player in baseball, great season. So, like, I always feel like he's either this or better, which at least helps. Let's get back to the Chiefs for just a minute. If they were to fall to 0-3, we understand their playoff percentages would absolutely crater based on what we said. 0-2, plenty of life. You're like a 12-13% chance, and you're not the there's a difference between 0-2 teams. 0-3 gold, and it gets bleak in a hurry.
3%. Fewer than 3% of teams that start 0-3 make the postseason since they've been tracking this in the modern era, I guess, basically, of the NFL, actually. 8 teams have started 0-2. You guys know that number, and after a Super Bowl loss. So this is not completely unheard of to have, a Super Bowl appearance with a loss, and it's a Super Bowl hangover, but in reverse. Like, hey, you lost, you got blown out, and then here you go. The last time that happened was actually Drew's Bengals in 2022. They, of course, lost to the Rams in the Super Bowl, and then they started 0-2. They still finished 12-4 in 2022.
And went to the Super Bowl.
And then the guy that the Chiefs are playing this Sunday, Russell Wilson, back when he was with the Seahawks, they were in a Super Bowl loss. And then in 2015, they started 0-2. They finished 10-6, made the playoffs, and I don't know what they did in the playoffs.
They lost in the wild card round. Now, in fairness, I looked through, and like a list is out here. I think it was our guy Aaron Schatz who put together the list of the 7 teams before the Chiefs to start 0-2 after losing the Super Bowl. And you're like, what does that mean for the inevitable part of the season? The truth is, I separated this into future Hall of Famers and Jags. And if you are a future Hall of Famer, things went fine when you started 0-2 after being in the Super Bowl. You weren't some laughing stock. You were fine. The 69 Colts had unitas. They made the playoffs. They went 8-5-1. They were kind of mediocre. The Rams with Vince Ferragamo won 5 games after starting 0-2 and going to the Super Bowl. The Commanders, obviously the then
Theismann.
Yeah. Theismann, they went 11-5. So you're like, oh, okay. Theismann, really good quarterback in his era. The Falcons went 5-11. You're like, well, that's not great. After going to the Super Bowl, their quarterback was Chris Chandler. So of course everything was going to always blow up. The 2002 Rams started 0-2. They had to start 4 different quarterbacks that year, including half the season with Warner, half the season with Bulger, and still went 12-4. The Seahawks with maybe a future Hall of Famer, let's call him at least a fringe guy, Russell Wilson, went 10-6. So if you have, and Joe Burrow, they went 12-4. If you have an absolute dude at quarterback, it does not matter historically that you start 0-2 the year after losing the Super Bowl. You typically right the ship. You solve your problems, and things balance themselves back out. That's what I look at when I see that list.
Sure.
And that the Chiefs should be one of those teams.
The cap on wins for that, if you buy into the trend, was 12. And I don't know what their strength of schedule was that year and all that kind of stuff. I guess the point is, if you thought this team was winning 14 games, I think you have to reevaluate that. You know, if you thought they were winning 11 before the season, I don't think you need to change it drastically. I think we went through the numbers yesterday, the betting markets and things like that. You can get some pretty damn good value on the Chiefs just to win 10 or 11 games now because of the hole that they have dug themselves in. That can flip quickly if they win on Sunday against the Giants. But yeah, you go to 0-3. I mean, there is the reality staring you in the face. Fewer than 3% of teams make the playoffs when you start 0-3. At some point, the math becomes a problem.
I'll be honest, just because of the opponent, too, I won't think they're making the playoffs anymore.
Yeah, loss against the Giants.
I don't remember at what point in the Royals season you and I just decided, we're not saying there's a 0% chance, but we're both saying we don't think they're going to make the playoffs. We were both premature on it, admittedly, because they got within a game and a half. But even like in this second run in September, we're like, okay, well, that'll be it. And the Royals, I will no longer be predicting them to make the playoffs or whatever it was at this point. If they go 0-3, I'm no longer predicting the Chiefs to be a playoff team. Because they go 0-3, I sure as hell think they're losing to the Ravens next weekend. And I think that they might lose to the Jags, and they're definitely losing to the Lions, right?
Yeah, it can really spiral on.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not going to be hard to start predicting losses if you're a Chiefs fan, if they lose to the Giants this weekend. I just gave those stats because, to me, that points to exactly what you know. Teams who go to the Super Bowl the year before, who are returning a huge chunk of their talent, and are returning their future Hall of Fame starting quarterback, 10-2, and I know this sounds crazy, right the ship. More often than not, they right the ship. Now, I will say, only a couple of those teams actually returned to the Super Bowl.
And there was not expanded.
Took a few years.
There was not expanded wild card for any of those except for the 2022 Bengals example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like,
you know, so just keep, I'm just saying, like, I understand that we're looking at it from a record perspective, but the percentage stuff, fewer than 3%, that part of it, when you start only
for 16-game schedule.
16-game schedule with one less playoff spot.
Didn't the Bengals, I think they won the division too after starting 0-2 in 2022.
They did. They were 12-4.
And they made it to the AFC title game before they lost to the Chiefs. The Bengals last year started 0-3. They finished 9-8. Obviously, mm-hmm. missed the playoffs. So that's, I guess, a direct comp to, you go down 0-3, you're playing catch up the rest of the way. And obviously, it makes it very difficult to make it in the first place.
It's a huge difference because if you win this game this weekend, which we expect them to do, then you're just, one, you play your better game at home against Baltimore away from nobody cares about 0-2 anymore. And not like it has no impact or it doesn't matter, but that, all right, you beat one of what is perceived to be one of the three best teams in the NFL. You're now back to 500, and everything feels normal. I'm not saying the one seed's back in play. The Bills are already 3-0. The one seed's dead, and that's fine. That doesn't have to be the way they get to the Super Bowl this year. The biggest takeaway might be that none of those teams were really Super Bowl contenders. The Bengals lost to the Chiefs. Now, the Bengals lost to the Chiefs in the AFC title game, like you mentioned. Seahawks lost in the wild card. The Rams lost in the divisional round. Falcons didn't make the playoffs. Rams didn't make the playoffs. Colts, I think. I don't remember how many play. I didn't look up the 1969 Colts finish, but does it matter?
The 1969.
I just looked up the record. I did not look up what they did in the playoffs. I don't even know how many playoff teams there were in 1969. So we'll leave them off there. And as pointed out again about the 1999 Falcons, it was Chris Chandler. So yeah, that was always going to blow up. I forgot he played quarterback in a Super Bowl. You don't even know who he is, do you, Drew? You don't even know who Chris Chandler is.
That's why I said, who?
Yeah.
I was 4 years old, or three, I guess, at that time.
And you're not even like, well, and I mean, it just speaks to the caliber of quarterback.
He played 17 years in the league.
I know. Wow. He played
Went to two Pro Bowls.
He was a super dude. He's like the king of average quarterbacks. If there's a Mount Rushmore of you were average during your entire NFL career, Chris Chandler would be like the Teddy Roosevelt one. He belongs on the statue of guy who stayed. He never led the league in anything. Never yardage, never touchdowns. He wasn't even a full-time starter for a huge chunk of his career.
In the 8-1-6, they say the one seed is not dead after 3 weeks.
I think it is. I thought it wasn't in play to begin the season, so that's probably part of my thinking anyway. That's before the 0-2 start. The Bills' schedule is far too easy. The Bills are likely to start 7-0 before they play the Chiefs. Their division stinks. Schedule's pretty soft.
And then the Chiefs would have to beat them in order for that to even be a possibility.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. I don't know if you feel confident in that right now.
One seed was not going to be much in play to begin with, I thought, this year. And now, I don't know, 0-2, the Bills already have the tiebreaker over the Ravens. If they beat you and they have the tiebreaker over you and the Ravens and they start 8-0,
it's beyond dead.
I think you're already there, but yeah, everybody would probably be on board at that point.
Would you like to offer to eat a shoelace like Jake Eisenberg if they are the one seed?
Not a shoelace.
What are you willing to eat if the Chiefs are the one seed?
Not a hat.
I can't get you into a shoelace or a hat. What can I talk you into food-wise?
Yeah, nothing that's clothing. I'll tell you that.
Actual food. Real food.
Yeah.
What about like a super today, hot pepper or
today,
something?
Oh, maybe. Today, although we ran into this, we tried to do that before and we're not allowed to do that.
I got real mad when I ate that
shit. I tried to go get the mashed potatoes today for you to try your Bob Evans mashed potatoes. And the store I went to by work did not sell that brand. So another day, Cody. I did go into the store to get it. They carry a different brand. The whole point is you have to try that brand.
So. Yeah, you mentioned specifically Bob Evans.
Do you want me to go to another
store?
Drew,
can you bring some in next week for Cody?
Okay. Yeah, we'll do it any day next week. I'll try the bagged mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
I hope that they'll eat
Drew's Joe Burrow jersey if the Chiefs get the one seed.
That's not an option.
No?
No, that's not an option.
What if we bought you another jersey?
Yeah, I guess if you bought me another Joe Burrow jersey, then fine.
They said you got to eat my Chipino. The problem with that is you're allergic to shellfish.
Yeah, that'll be a big problem.
I can't try to kill you on the show.
Be a big problem. What would you do for the Chiefs to be the one seed?
He has to eat a plate of shrimp, and we just have an empty bin ready to go in case he's uncomfortable. Jeez. No, we can't, you know.
Yes, Odyssey Corporate will love that. That I'm sure that'll...
What if we get you to sign a waiver? What's the rule on that? Yeah. Can we tase you?
Yeah. Well, again, you're still in trouble. There's a chance you get tased and suspended from the show by Drew and I. And everybody in Kansas City, if what you said yesterday about Mahomes happens on Sunday. And I'm not going to bring it back up.
I can't believe you sent the clip out.
He sent a clip out. You can check the podcast.
Go to our social media page and you can
find it. I couldn't believe you put that out there. Anyway, don't forget, Sports Talk on 96.5 The Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Up next, Josh Briscoe will join us, of course, part of the pre- and post-game show, host of it on the Chiefs Radio Network. And Missouri's got a game that I think can set them up perfectly for the college football playoff. We'll tell you about it next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.